Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together to complete that honey-do list, featuring answers to your questions and head-to-head tool challenges. Let's get started with the show with the Handy Guys, Brian and Paul.
Welcome to show number 15. It's show number 15, and we are going to talk about how to care for your lawn. Last week, we talked about how to prepare your mower for the season. And this week, we want to talk about how to keep your lawn looking fine.
That's right.
And you know what, Brian? Today, I used my mower with the sharpened blade.
Yeah?
And
how'd that work out?
It worked great, and already my lawn is looking very good.
Yeah.
It just looks like it was mowed, but hopefully I have a better lawn this season. And in fact, as I was coming over here tonight, it's night, I came outside, and I heard something, and I realized it was a sprinkler. And a neighbor had the sprinkler going, and I thought that was odd. You know, this early in the season, have the sprinkler going, you know, for a long time at night.
Yeah.
Didn't know if it was a good time to sprinkle or not, but we'll talk about that when we get in this show. If you have questions about when to sprinkle and how much to add water to your lawn.
Right.
We're going to address that in show number 15. But before we get to that, let's give out our contact information.
All right. Call us. If you have any questions for the Handy Guys, you can always call us at area code 615-676-0877 or use the website.
HandyGuysPodcast.com. You can Google it, Handy Guys, or just Handy Guys Podcast, whatever you prefer. We're gonna come up near the top. Come to go to our website. You can hit the contact form at the top. Better yet, hit the store icon link at the top. Check out our favorite tools. It's an Amazon link, and if you go through there, you'll help support the show, and you'll get a great tool.
That's right.
So please contact with your questions or your show ideas, and we'll be happy to get back to you, and we'll cover them. But today we want to talk about lawn care. We all have, or most of us that are homeowners, have lawns, whether they're small lawns or large lawns. And this time of year, especially in the north, it's getting warmer. And when the ground temperature gets up, the grass turns green, begins to grow, and it begins to grow fast.
Yeah. In the spring, sometimes I find myself having to mow twice a week, which is, one of the downsides of having a healthy lawn and fertilizing and keeping things going and keeping things watered. You're mowing a little more frequently. But as long as you have a sharp mower blade, it should be no problem. So do you use a service or do you do it yourself as far as, fertilizing and stuff like that? Why don't we start there?
Right. Let's talk about that because, if you want to have a healthy lawn, you need to fertilize it. You need to take care of it. And, a lot of people do use those lawn services, they dump your chemical company,
right.
Dump the chemicals on your lawn company lawn service. It makes your grass nice and green and full and rich, and they do it all for you. You just have to send them a check every month or every visit.
That's right.
And also, your other option, obviously, is to do it yourself, and that's probably easier than ever as far as how often and when, because you can go to your home center and you have the, couple different brands, and they all have, one of them has a 6-step program, or maybe one company has a 5-step program.
Yes.
And they just tell you on the bags, make sure you do this, early spring, this late spring, do this in the summer, and do this in the fall.
Do this in the right before
early
winter
fall.
Sets in.
Right. And as long as you don't run a bulldozer through your lawn or anything like that, you'll have a healthy lawn.
That's right.
And or if you don't overdo it either, because I once knew a neighbor who thought, well, if a little bit of fertilizer is good, then 10 times the amount must be better, and he burned out his entire lawn once.
That's right. Well, maybe that's a good opportunity to start from scratch and just till it over and reseed,
right.
and
It did make a comeback. But, the advantages, I guess, of the lawn, the paid lawn service are obvious. You don't have to expend the energy. Your hope would be that the lawn service would make an accurate test of your soil and would apply the fertilizer accordingly. However, and we're going to talk about soil tests, I don't think that they do. I think they just apply the same amounts no matter who you are or what you are and hope that it just works.
That's right. I was talking to a neighbor the other day who's got probably one of the best looking lawns I've ever seen. I said, what do you do to keep your lawn looking so nice? And he said, I just keep feeding it. That's
right.
What he said. So and I said, oh great, that's kind of part of the inspiration for this show, I guess. And his lawn did look good. Since we're all about DIY. Right. We're not going to focus on the commercial stuff. You know, you want to do a little cost-benefit analysis. If you've got a really large lawn, it might be more cost-effective to do it yourself. A really small lawn, you might find it's less expensive to have a commercial unit or a company come out and do it for you. But what about organic stuff versus the stuff you're going to find in the big box home centers?
Right. There are several organic solutions out there. However, a lot of home centers don't carry the various products. And we'll mention them a little bit later, but there are some folks that are concerned about some of the fertilizers, or at least the pesticides and the herbicides that particularly that are used for the weed killers and for the grubs and things such as that. And they tend to be the more dangerous items that are used by the lawn service companies. Not so much the basic fertilizer, I don't think, but it's the herbicides when they come in to try to kill the weeds. And there are some issues with some of those chemicals that they're using, especially as they collect in our groundwater system and run off into streams and such.
That's right. They can cause, if you have a pond or a stream nearby and you get a lot of the nitrogen and phosphorus, all the various fertilizers, they also fertilize things like algae in the pond.
Right.
And so you get a lot of growth of stuff that's going to choke out the pond.
Yeah, you get all this oxygen in the water and the plants grow, or nitrogen, and is it oxygen or nitrogen? Nitrogen, I guess.
The nitrogen.
Yeah, and the plants grow like crazy, and then they actually end up killing the fish. Okay, let's talk about, so we're assuming it's a DIY show, and we want to take care of our own lawn. What's the first thing we need to do if we're thinking about taking care of our lawn? We want it to look better.
Right. If you're serious about doing it, very precisely and very exacting, you're going to want to do a soil test. You're going to want to find out what your lawn needs and what it doesn't need. And the soil test kits, there's two ways to do it, Paul. You can buy a test kit at a decent garden center and do the test yourself, or you can get these mailers where they tell you, you dig up some soil samples and mix them up and put them in a baggie and you mail them off to a company that'll do it. Or you might have a local, agricultural center, college extension program that'll do the test for you. But since we're DIY, I'll describe kind of how that soil test works from a DIY perspective. It's going to test three things. It's going to, or actually four. Nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium are the three main ingredients in fertilizer. Those are the three numbers in that order. So you see it written on a bag like, 28, 3, 17. I don't know what the numbers are. So that's nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, the three primary ingredients in a fertilizer. And it's also going to test the pH, which is your acidity of the soil. And
So in other words, if the nitrogen, the phosphorus, and the potassium, also known as the N, P, and K, are their symbols, right?
That's right.
And the table of the elements. But if you test it, then you can, if you really want to tweak your fertilization, you can actually get bags of fertilizer that have certain amounts of those three ingredients.
That's right. Or even buy them individually.
Right.
And
okay.
Apply them separately.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy the program from Scott's or Vigro or one of those kind of companies, they're going to put the most common blend of those three primary ingredients in the bag, and you just put it on.
They're just going to kind of give you a guesstimate.
That's right.
But then the other important item is the pH that you mentioned.
Right.
And I know that if the pH is too high, generally you want your pH to be between 6.5 and 7. But if it's below, if it's lower than 7, significantly lower than 7, that means your soil is acidic and you need to raise the pH.
That's right.
And how do you raise the pH?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot here. Where are my notes?
Come on. To raise the pH, then what you...
You spread something on your lawn.
Yeah, you just spread some lime, right? You spread lime on your lawn if it's too high. If your number is too low... I'm sorry, if it's... Did I say it wrong already? We got to get this straight. If it's too low, it's well below 7, it's acidic, and you need to add lime. However, if it's above 7, then it's alkaline, and you add sulfur to lower your pH of your soil.
And they sell a specific sulfur at the garden center for doing just that.
Right. So, and it's important that you have... You mentioned a do-it-yourself test kit. You can get them at your garden center. Or you can send it out. Now, I like to try to find someone to send it out to, mainly because I'm hoping that they have, high-end equipment. They're getting a precision test. You never know for sure. Maybe they just set it aside and guess and send you back.
Right.
But I've heard that some of the cheaper test kits may not be accurate. And in fact, in one example, again, you know, just from doing some research, the gentleman said that the number was way off, that he would have actually done the wrong thing. He would have added lime when he should have added sulfur. So I don't know. I mean, you can pay $50, $60, $70 for a test kit if you really wanted to get a higher-end test kit. I wouldn't advise that. I would try the lower-end test kit, see how your lawn looks,
yeah,
hope that it's working.
I think my test kit was about, I'm trying to remember, it was a year plus since I bought it, but it was maybe $40
right,
for the test kit, and that gives you enough materials to do the testing for half a dozen or more times.
Okay.
So, you know, it's probably ends up being cheaper on a per test basis,
right,
than sending it out.
Now, keep in mind, when you do your test, if you decided you need to add lime or sulfur, if you're not somewhere in that close to 7 range, then this is an addition to your basic fertilization.
That's right.
Your herbicides and
that's
all that.
Good point.
This is a separate step. So if you have to add lime, then that's something you have to do separately from your basic fertilizer plant.
Right. And the test kit will tell you how much. It'll say so many pounds per 1,000 square feet or something
right,
like that of the material. So you're going to have to do a little bit of math to figure out your spreader settings and all of that.
Now, and lime is just a common product you see all the time. Like if you watch a football game, that's what they use for the lines.
For the white lines, kind of sure. And so, you can buy that, you know, at the garden center or at the big box stores or whatever. And it's important when you do your soil test, and all the tests will have instructions for doing this, you're actually going to take a little bit of soil from multiple areas of your yard,
mm-hmm,
because you're going to average out. You might have a really strong acidic soil in one area and a very base soil in another area. You might have more phosphorus or nitrogen in it one area and less in another area. So you're going to kind of average it out across the entire yard.
Right, and the other thing you need to keep in mind is that you need to, your soil, the type of soil you have as a whole is an issue that you need to be aware of. If it's a really compact soil or more like a clay, then you want to think about aerating that soil. And if it's really bad, it's not uncommon for folks to do it in the spring and fall to try to loosen it up so that the fertilizer gets into the roots of the grass and the water and so on.
Right, versus just running off.
Now, if you only do it once a year, I think the best time to do it is in the fall.
Yeah, and that's a good time. You can, when you aerate, you can also overseed and
right,
add a little more
exactly,
seed. And it's a good time to do those two things together. All right, so when we put all of these, this stuff, the fertilizer, on our yards, what kind of spreader do you use, Paul? Or do you use the commercial service?
I was using a commercial service, but now I'm going to be doing it myself, and I have done it myself in the past. I use a broadcast spreader because it covers more area.
Right, and that's the kind that has a like a little wheel that spins and
right,
the stuff drops out and it spreads. Yeah, that's the same kind I use as
well.
It
makes a wider path and it allows you to do it faster.
Yeah, I agree. I used to have what's called a drop spreader,
mm-hmm,
and that has just a little row of holes across the width of the bottom of the spreader, and it just drops straight out the bottom. What I found the problem with that is it was more difficult to get even coverage. You had to make sure that you didn't overlap your lines and that you didn't have spaces between your lines.
Right. I think the main advantage of the drop spreader is you have a little more control as far as, you know, if you're going around garden beds and things like that.
That's right.
If you're dropping, for instance, a pre-emergent, and you do that in the spring, that's one of the first things you do early spring to keep
crabgrass, grassy
weeds and things like that from seeding. You don't necessarily want to spread that into your garden where you're going to eventually put, or you may have plants or that kind of thing.
That's a good point, because I just planted some, I don't know, some kind of seed for the wife and kids that they got. And but then I applied the early spring pre-emergent weed and feed, which is, like Paul said, it keeps the grass seed from sprouting, or the weedy seeds from sprouting, but also grass seeds and other kinds of seeds. It keeps them from sprouting. So I had a little area where we planted some flower seeds, and so I covered that area when I went by with the broadcast spreader weed and feed for the pre-emergent weeds,
mm-hmm,
so that I wouldn't get that weed killer or weed preventative into that
right.
flower bed.
So yeah, when it broadcasts, it shoots it out from side to side, and you know it. Yeah, you tend to shoot it all over the sidewalk, the street, you know,
right.
just when you're doing those, the areas closer to that. So that's the only downside, but I still like it because it just seems like if I had a drop spreader, it would take me three times. It would take me three times as much time.
Yeah.
Is that how you say that? Three times is much of my energy,
it
too.
It would definitely take a lot longer to
okay,
do.
So let's talk about, you got your spreaders, you got to get your bags of fertilizer. So early spring, the first thing, just as the grass is starting to green a little bit, maybe even a little bit before that.
Right.
If you're in the northern areas, for us in the mid-Atlantic, you're talking maybe late March.
That's right.
You need to put down your pre-emergent.
That's right. The pre-emergent that and also a fertilizer yeah. as well along with that.
Sure.
So it's typically sold as some kind of weed and feed product
right.
or, you know, feeds
Halts
and
is a yeah. popular pre.
Yeah, I think that's one of them. So, and that's mainly for your crabgrass.
Now you can get just the preventative, the pre-emergent, or you can get, like you said, the weed and feed. A lot of the bigger companies now combine the two. So it puts
right.
the pre-emergent down, and it also adds a little bit of fertilizer to help that grass really get going once the ground temperatures raise up and you know the grass turns green. Which
that's
is
right.
is why the grass knows when to turn green, because the ground temperature gets to a certain
that's
level.
That's right.
So, okay, so you do that first thing, and then again, late spring, what do you do?
That's right, like a month later, 6 weeks
Easter
later.
Easter is what I used to be the general rule, but
right.
Easter was so early this year, that was kind of like your first time. So now you're looking, actually before Labor Day, probably around here in Mid-Atlantic at least.
Right, and there you're going to use, again, a weed and feed kind of product. If your soil test indicates you need to do a little bit of additional feeding, and that is going to have another weed control, but that's for what they call broadleaf weeds. So that's going to be your dandelions, your clovers, and things like that.
And you do that. So you do that in late spring. Now, dandelions, though, generally speaking, the best time to prevent them, I think they drop their seed in the fall or something. You're supposed to, that's, you know, usually if you fertilize correctly and they put something in the, well, we'll get there when you get to the fall program, that will prevent the dandelions the next year. But this just kind of helps. It's a kind of a weed killer that if they made it through all that and
that's
you
right.
still have them, then it'll help kill them.
That's supposedly the way that works. And I know I have problems with dandelions because my, you know, large field behind the house that is just a field of dandelions
mm-hmm.
And a neighbor on one side
right.
that lets the dandelions grow.
Right, so the seed's blowing across.
Yeah,
all
so that. It's, you know, dandelions everywhere. And so
they're pretty little guys, though.
Yeah, and the kids like them, right? But maybe we got to learn how to do a DIY show on making dandelion wine or something like that, right?
There you go. But you know, okay. So you got those two applications. Now, what's interesting is that you mentioned clover and other weeds like clover. It you know, it used to be, believe it or not, you know, 50, 60 years ago that, you know, we talk about going to look for that four-leaf clover. Well, nowadays in modern lawns, I can't find a three-leaf clover, let alone a four-leaf clover, because
well,
there aren't any clovers.
You haven't looked in my yard too much.
Because everyone's killing their clover. And I was actually told by, I think it was my father that told me that in the old days at the hardware store, when they sold grass seed, there would actually be clover seed in it, and it was preferred. I mean, many people like to have clover in their yard.
That's right, because it grows vigorously and it's drought tolerant
right.
and all of that. So
it's interesting. So I don't know what it is that why we, you know, if is it just that we just want to be perfect, or we're obsessive compulsive, or maybe because, you know, golf is so popular and the golf courses are, you know, generally manicured perfectly, although you would never want your kids to play on them.
I guess not.
Because all the chemicals they dump on them. But anyway, just some food for thought.
Yep. All right, so no clover in my yard, or at least I'm trying to get rid of it.
All right, so we get into the time is getting warmer. We're getting into June. We've already put down our, you know, weed and feeds twice, the pre-emergence. We've gotten all that ready. We're getting into the summer months. So now what do we need to do during
That's
the
right.
summer?
Well, in the summer is typically when, you know, these multi-step programs from Scotts or Vigro or something like that, they'll have a another fertilizer application, but also typically with that, it'll be with some type of pest killer. You might have grubs, Japanese beetles. They're the same thing, just a different stage of development. Fleas and ticks, other kinds of pests that might be annoying or maybe can damage the grass. So the summer they'll have an additional kind of a light feeding and also take care of some of the pests.
These pests tend to, you know, the grubs tend to eat, they do eat the roots of your grass. So that's why they can do a lot of damage.
That's right.
If you don't take care of them. And usually the application during the summer months, the fertilizer application is a lighter fertilizer because the grass is generally not as vigorous if it's really hot.
That's right.
And you could burn your lawn out if you were to dump something, you know, that was a stronger application like you might in the spring.
That's right. And then... you know, and then you've got your fall treatment and your and then a winter prep. And then the fall is when you're going to also do any seeding and aerating and so forth, like we mentioned.
Right.
So if you're going to use one of these programs, just follow the, you know, kind of stick with one brand and follow that 5 or 6 step program.
Now, in my opinion, the fall is the most important application. If you didn't do any other fertilizer, if you were just lazy, you only wanted to apply, you know, once or twice a year just to get by, that's when you want to do it, in the fall.
Why is that?
Well, why is that? Well, for one thing, the grass is more vigorous than, say, the summer. So it's got, you got good water and that thing, so it can penetrate the roots of the grass. But the other thing is that while the grass goes dormant during the winter months, the roots are still, you know, growing and absorbing and strengthening the plant. So if you give them some fertilizer that lasts for a while, it helps them to remain strong for the next spring. The other thing is that also that's the time where they put stuff in the fertilizer to handle the dandelions and things like that. So when it comes up in the spring, it's more vigorous.
Yep. Okay, now how about watering? Do you water your lawn, Paul?
Yeah, I do. And I mentioned, you know, that I heard my neighbor, and I don't question my neighbor because he's like a turfologist, or, you know, he actually studied turf at the university. And
why didn't we interview him for this show?
So maybe, yeah, it probably would have been a good idea, actually. Maybe, you know, he's watering, he believes in watering often but small amounts, I think. But he, you know, generally you don't want to water at night, because your concern is with the, as the, it becomes more humid at night and everything, that you're going to promote the growth of molds on the grass.
Right.
And it could damage your grass. But you generally want to water early in early morning.
Yeah, that's a general recommendation, is early morning.
Maybe evening or something.
Yeah,
or afternoon.
But if it's, you know, right now it's still springtime and it's not hot and humid at night, so we're probably not gonna, probably all right.
Sure.
But the goal is to get the water soaked into the ground so that it's at the bottom of the roots, essentially, because you want to promote deeper root growth, and that's going to be able to give you healthier grass and a more robust grass. So the typical recommendation is 1 inch of water a week.
And how do you know if you have an inch?
You can just take an old soup can or something like that and sit it out there in your lawn while you're watering. And when it's got an inch of water in it, shut the sprinkler off.
So you need to kind of keep track when it's going to rain and how much it has rained as well, right? So if it's, you know, it's rained 1/4 inch, then you can supplement that.
That's right. And they do make these fancy timers that can measure out 1 inch of water, and the real fancy sprinkler systems even have rain gauges built into them, so that they don't, you know, they'll take that into account. The funniest thing is, if you're, you know, someplace that has an automatic sprinkler system on a timer, for example, and, you know, you see the sprinklers running when it's pouring rain outside or something like that. So that's a less sophisticated system, obviously.
Hmm.
And then keeping the grass mowed at a proper height.
Yes.
We talked a little bit about that on last week's show, but let's reiterate that here since we're talking about lawns.
Right. So most people tend to cut their lawns too low, in my opinion. A couple of reasons for this. One is that they just like it cut low. It gets that nice, you know, again, I think it's the golf course thing. They cut it super low at the golf course, and you get that feel. And baseball fields, too, now are perfectly manicured.
And it's a different kind of grass.
Right. It is a different kind of grass, and it's watered, you know, every day off, you know, and it's been treated with who knows how many chemicals and that kind of thing. The other reason I think people tend to mow low is they think, the grass is growing really fast this time of year. I'm going to mow it lower so I can go a full week before I have to mow again. But that just doesn't work, because grass needs food for its roots. That's how it, right. it grows. It's trying to feed its roots. And it does this through, what was the eighth grade science? What did you right. learn?
Photosynthesis.
That's right. right. Where it converts sunlight into sugars to feed its roots. So if you cut it real low, it's going to tend to grow faster because it needs to get to more sunlight. And it needs more of that grass blade
right.
to capture the sunlight.
Right.
So if you, it's not necessarily going to make it, you know, allow you to go longer if you cut it a little higher.
That's right. So just cut it at about 3 inches. And each time you cut it, don't take more than a third of the blade of the grass off. So when it gets to 4 inches, cut it back to 3, essentially, is what we're saying.
All right. Is there anything else we need to know about our lawn care?
I don't know. Where are my notes?
What do we do?
Yeah. You know what? The biggest thing that I've been facing, I think, in recent years has been the grub problem. Mm. And there's one of the...
And what do they attract, the grubs?
Moles. The grubs attract the moles, they attract skunks.
And they eat your roots. But and,
right.
I found that the grubs, my bigger problem is the first year or two I was in my house is I had the mole tunnels all over the place. And and so I applied a pesticide to kill the grubs, and I think it worked. Unfortunately, I didn't apply it in all my garden beds, so now I get the mole tunnels in the wintertime through my garden beds.
Right. So the and then those grubs turn into Japanese beetles, and I had an ornamental tree that was almost devastated by the Japanese beetles. Hmm. So I applied a product that had something called Merit in it for the first time this spring. It was a spring application. According to the manufacturer, it was an okay time to put it down. And it's supposed to control the grubs. But there's another product I was reading about that looks interesting. It's called Milky Spore. And that's a biological agent. There's actually these bacteria in this product that attack the grubs. And it takes 2 or 3 years of treatment for it to become effective. But once it does, it really kicks in. But they also recommend that you have all your neighbors do the same kind of a treatment. And you can use that with the chemical treatments at the same time, interestingly.
Right.
So I may look into that, but I did look into it. It's a little bit expensive, you do have to apply it a couple years in a row, so it's not immediately effective.
Sure. Now, I'm a bit concerned about the various applications of pesticides, especially not only the pesticides, but the herbicides as well. You know, just the other day, they came on a Saturday, they sprayed all my grass, and it was wet for 4 or 5 hours. I went out and checked, and as a result, I wouldn't let the kids play in our yard. I sent them to other people's yards, neighbors. But I'm concerned about them getting these herbicides, pesticides in their system, and I know that there's a lot of people that are concerned about it. Unfortunately, I don't think there have been enough studies to show exactly what the dangers are. There are other alternative, you know, and possibly effective materials that you can use to deal with these issues. Number one, for the pre-emergent, instead of using your typical pre-emergents, there are some that suggest a corn gluten product where you can put down. They're tiny little pellets that you spread on your lawn that are supposed to handle the crabgrass and the other grassy weeds. As far as the grubs, I'm not sure.
Well, the Milky Spore. It's a specific bacteria, and
okay,
it only affects the the grubs.
You said that, didn't you?
Yeah,
I wasn't listening.
That's right.
Next time, maybe
one was listening. I don't know out there.
So there are some products you can do some research out on the net. We'd love to hear from our listeners to see if anyone's tried these various products. I think the biggest thing you can do is not to get too uptight about having the perfect lawn and not worry about a few weeds here and there. And
you can always just pull the weeds.
Exactly.
Manually.
Yeah, you can pull the weeds, get out, get your kids working with you. It's good family time. And it did take me a while to get them to learn, which is weed and which is not. But for a while, they just pull grass, but that's okay. And they learn, and you can do that and just not get too uptight about having the best lawn in the neighborhood. It might be safer for your kids to maybe have a few bad patches here and there because you're not worried about covering your lawn with tons of chemicals and pesticides, and just feeding it with natural fertilizers and just having a healthy lawn that way.
That could be. Take that all into consideration. You know, my experience, and I think mostly yours as well, has been with the traditional products we buy at the big box store that, you know, have your herbicides, pesticides, and, you know, phosphorus, nitrogen, and
right.
potassium, and whatever in it.
Now, if you have a bunch of huge anachroids in your house, you know, spiders, you know, then I recommend, you know, the... John Goodman or whatever, and an acrophobia, where you get the chemicals out, you know,
right.
the acid.
DDT or something.
Yeah, I don't want that in my house. Anyway, that's all we have for this week. If you have any suggestions or comments, particularly about lawn care, we'd love to hear from you, and we may discuss it in a future show. But until next week.
We're the Handy Guys, Brian and Paul. I'm Brian.
And I'm Paul. Talk to you then.
Thanks.
Bye.